Welcome to Choosing Leadership, a podcast for high performers with big dreams and for leaders who know that they are more powerful than the level that they are currently playing. I am Sumit Gupta, your host and the founder CEO of the Deploy Yourself School of Leadership. I am here to help the best leaders get better and to help organizations massively improve their output and impact, and at the same time, eradicating workplace stress. Yes. Completely eradicating, not just reducing, completely eradicating. I believe in creating a future and a work culture where people wait for Mondays, not Fridays, and get to do their most meaningful work. The aim of this podcast is not to provide you more content, but instead shift the context under which you operate. This podcast is titled Choosing Leadership because that is what leadership is, a choice. In each episode, I will celebrate leaders who have made such choices, which are not always easy and comfortable, but which has helped them get to where they are today. And let us celebrate the leader in us for choosing to move over our fears, for choosing to be motivated by something bigger than ourselves, and for choosing to deal with every challenge that comes on the way. Let us celebrate you right now for stepping into the unknown and taking courageous action, as those were the moments when you chose leadership. At the end, I will share how you can be our next guest on this podcast. And with that, let's get started. James is the CEO of Argonaut Group and the best-selling author of The Flexible Method, Prepare to Prosper in the Next Global Crisis. In the interview, James shared his fascinating journey from studying languages to becoming a successful entrepreneur and leader. He emphasized the importance of creative freedom, collaborative teamwork, and the need for leaders to connect authentically with their teams. He discussed key lessons such as standing firm on principles, avoiding toxic business practices, and the significance of win-win collaboration. Beyond what he does, he also revealed his passion for cooking as a way to express love and nurture, showcasing the human side of a leader deeply committed to both personal and professional growth. Welcome, James, to the Choosing Leadership podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a great pleasure to be here with you.
It's a pleasure to have you here as well. Why don't you start by sharing a little bit about yourself and what keeps you busy these days?
Thank you. My name is James Burstall. I'm chief executive of a production group. We are headquartered in London with offices in Liverpool and Glasgow in the UK, and also offices in New York and Los Angeles. And we produce programs for the main streamers, obviously Netflix, Amazon, Apple, but also many cable channels around the world and terrestrial channels such as the BBC and Channel 4 in the UK. And we sell our programs across the world. We sell out into 167 countries, including the Netherlands. And we produce everything from reality to documentary. We do some very hard-hitting investigations, Saturday night entertainment shows, and also scripted drama. So we are a truly diversified group producing content really across all the platforms, from TikTok all the way up to IMAX and everything else in between.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that sounds like something amazing. But can you share a bit more of your backstory? How did you get started into what you have today?
I've always been interested in communication. And in fact, I studied languages at university. I studied in the UK, but then I also went to study in Paris, in France, and in Munich, in Germany. And since then, I've learned Spanish and Italian, and I do speak a very little Dutch. And I've also been, over the years, learning some Korean and some Mandarin, although that is completely different ballgame. It's really tough. Of course, in the Netherlands, people are so amazing about speaking multiple different languages and being so broad in outlook, which I absolutely love. So that was really how I started at school, really being interested in cultures and people. So after university, I decided to become a journalist. That's when I moved to Paris. And I worked for, first of all, lots of magazines, including Vanity Fair, Condé Nast Traveler, and Vogue and other publications. And then I came back to London and I worked for newspapers such as the Evening Standard and the Daily Mail. And then I think I realized by my mid-20s that actually television could be a really good place for me because I continued my journalism, but also get into entertainment. And crucially work in teams. And I do really like working in teams of people because creative work is a very collaborative effort. So, and then I got into TV, and initially I was on camera doing some reporting, and then I became a producer. And then in 2000, set up my own production group, which has evolved. And I do now really love the fact that as a production group, we are completely independent and we can really produce whatever we are excited about. The creative sector is incredibly vibrant. When you work with creative people, I love having and giving space to really push the envelope, experiment, try new things. And when you run a group such as mine, which is a very diversified group, you can do a whole range of programming, as I said, from current affairs to reality to documentary, history, technology, science, music, art, children's, and scripted drama. It keeps me busy.
Yeah, I think you have said it very simply, but I've spoken with enough entrepreneurs or business owners to know that this journey from, let's say, being a journalist to being a creative and then to running a business, starting a business, running a business is not without its risks and challenges. So can you share how have you evolved as a person, as a leader, and how easy or difficult this journey has been for you?
I think it was always in me that I wanted to run my own business, because even when I was a small kid, I was organizing groups of people to produce plays and stuff at school and then at university. So I think I've always liked that kind of entrepreneurial trying things out and also not having people breathing down my neck and telling me what I can and can't do. I think that creative freedom is really important. So I think it was in me from the get-go. And then to be honest, what I did do is through my 20s, and early 30s, I worked for a lot of different people. And I had some amazing experiences. I won't name specifics, but for example, one company I worked with and they had fantastic relationships and they really nurtured not only their people, but also their clients. And that is essential. Business is not a P&L. Business is collective of people. And that particular company were really good at forging relationships. So I learned a lot from them. One thing I also learned from them is, having worked with them for a period of time, I demonstrated that I could develop ideas and indeed sell them. And I said to them, listen, I now want you to give me shares in your company because I want to be your partner. And if you make me your partner, I will help you grow. And they said to me, oh, James, yeah, you've demonstrated that you're good at your job, but we can't do that yet. Maybe when you're 40. I was like, by the time I'm 40, that's going to be too late. I can't wait that long. And I had to say to them, listen, I really like working with you, but if you're not prepared to make me a partner, I will leave. And they were not prepared to make me a partner, so I did leave. And so that was important to stand my ground. The next company I went to work for immediately after that were a company who were very big in the US. And I wanted to learn about the international distribution of formats and programming, because now in the media sector, as indeed in many things, we work in a completely globalized marketplace. And just working in the UK is not enough. It's a very market, 65 million consumers of content in the UK, and it's my home. But in the US, we have 350 million people and so many more platforms. And when you get a big hit in the US, you get very good margins. And a big hit in the US will travel around the world, as will UK hits. The UK and the US markets are very vibrant in TV and film. A big US hit counts for a lot. So it was important to have that as part of the business. I did 50% of my business is US, 50% UK. The one thing I learned with that particular company, though, and sometimes the difficult experiences are almost more important than the easy ones, is that company took great delight in doing deals with people where they basically felt that they had nailed the other side to the ground and squeezed them dry. And we would end the meeting where we'd done a deal and they would rub their hands in glee saying, great, we got one up on it. And I knew that those people would never come back. They might do that one deal, but basically, if you messed with me and made me feel terrible, why would I come back and do a second deal? It's like a self-perpetuating cycle that eventually runs out of road. So I learned from that company that bullying or being aggressive with your business partners is completely counterproductive.
Mm.
Don't get me wrong, you've got to be tough and you've got to get a great deal. But yeah. It has to be, the win is everything. And when it's win-win, you do well, they do well, and they want to come back and do more. Mm. So you get project 2 and 3 and 4 and so on. So again, I had to leave that company because I thought, if they're going to go around basically being mean to my clients, I will end up losing them. So it was a difficult lesson, but it was a very important lesson. In fact, it was after that I thought, you know what? I worked for 2 different companies. I know how to create ideas. I know how to sell them. I do. I'm beginning to learn how to run a team, but I can't do it with other people who I don't respect or don't respect me or indeed respect our clients. In a way, that was rocket fuel. I talk about using a venom and turning it into rocket fuel because it was quite a nasty, toxic place to work. And in fact, since then, that company has had trouble, had problems. But I think it's important always in every experience to, however difficult it may be, and sometimes we have positive experiences, thank goodness, but the difficult ones, use that as a lesson. What is there in that I need to learn? And in that particular lesson, I needed to learn that you've got to treat your clients, you've got to treat your people with respect, and then they will come back and work with you again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess that's how I first launched.
Thank you. Yeah. I think what I'm listening is that that wonderful groundedness, confidence in yourself, which allows you to ask for what you want, but at the same time, not in a way that you dominate others and you don't allow others to dominate you. So very solid balance between confidence, self-belief, and that it's a win. It's not like my way or your way. That's amazing. I think that's a wonderful mix that allows you to have these conversations. So with this journey, what's next for you? What's the next few years looking like? What is it that you will create in the coming years?
I set up my own company in 2001 called Leopard Films, and we had a very successful first 10 years producing reality, documentaries, scripted drama, managing our own distribution. And then the company in 2010 decided they wanted to buy us. And I looked at that, it looked quite interesting. And they said, why don't you come in and basically take over our company and come and run a group? So that gave me an idea that actually I was ready for promotion. And you can do that when you're running your own business. You don't have to keep doing the same thing over and over for years. In fact, I don't think it's in your personal best interest to keep doing the same thing for too long. And I don't think it's in the group's best interest to have the same people in the same seat year on year. I think that good people in good jobs probably have a lifespan, and that's probably somewhere between 5 and 10 years. Anyway, so I've been running Leopard Films for 10 years, had this idea of setting up a group. And then, in fact, I took advice from a colleague who worked at Channel 4, who's a very brilliant entrepreneur. And she said to me, James, I like the idea of you running a group now and expanding and working with bringing some more peers around a table in a boardroom, doing a bigger job, if you like. But actually doing it with that company is probably not a great idea because they haven't got a good reputation. You're probably going to spend 2 years firing everybody, which is miserable. Why don't you do the group idea, set up a group, but do it on your own? So I had some advisors. I went to talk to the bank, and the bank said, yeah, we'll lend you some money. So then, to your question, we started a now 12-year journey of a new group. And the group is fully diversified. We've bought companies, mergers and acquisitions. We've also set up joint ventures with some very brilliant producers who are looking for a space where they can really thrive and do their own work, whilst at the same time being supported by a larger group, which has got some cash flow and a lot of expertise that we can offer them. So then for the last 12 years, we've been doing that, and I'm really enjoying it. And in fact, now we are also looking at what is the next chapter. And of course, the next chapter is going to be AI. And we are developing some really exciting AI projects around the content space. Obviously, in the media, we have a lot of content, thousands of hours in our back catalog. And the way the world is changing now is that we've moved into a time of non-exclusivity, which I think is a very interesting new trend. So whereas in the past, you would create one show, one piece of content for one platform. Now, many platforms are happy to have the same content when it's a big success. And we've discovered now through data research that the audience don't get annoyed or bored when the same big shows can be found in different places. Actually, it puts oxygen into the brand and it creates more dialogue, more conversation, more interest. So I'm interested in how can we, as a group, start to really engage with managing and exploiting and diversifying that content into merchandising, licensing, digital, podcasts, and so on. And in fact, we are already doing some of this. We're taking some of our shows live on the road. We've done some gaming deals around a big show we produce called The Masked Singer. And I'm excited about how we introduce AI into this and working on that at the moment.
Yeah. So I have a question around leadership here, right? Because when you are running a group, and the question would be, how is that different from running one organization in terms of what kind of a leader do you need to be? And then what kind of leadership support? I assume that you will also have leaders in each of those separate units, separate companies. So what kind of leadership support have you provided those leaders so that you can run the group effectively? And I think the flip side of it, what are the challenges? What are the biggest challenges that you see for yourself?
I think leadership now is all about collaboration and partnership. The idea of a leader knowing all of the answers and dictating from the top down what you have to do is completely dead, does not function. I couldn't work for someone like that, nor could millions of other people around the world. I think smart leaders now are people who manage to communicate in a very authentic way and connect with their people and bring them on a journey so that collectively you can become bigger than yourself, any of the constituent parts. Because I do think that when you are a group, you bring many different skills and expertise to the table. In fact, I will give an example. I have written this book, which is called The Flexible Method, which looks at, in part, our experience through COVID and looks at many other crises and surviving other different kinds of crises. But what one of the chapters in that book is Gather Your Generals. Now, COVID obviously was earth-shattering for all of us. It was very painful and very difficult. We were told in production back in March 2020 that nobody was going to produce anything for a year. And in my industry, if you don't produce, you have no income. You will have to let your people go, you cannot pay your bills, and basically shut down. So that was not an option. So actually, one of the first things I did is I listened very carefully to one of my colleagues here, who said to me, James, this is really tough for everybody, including you. And as the boss, I can't imagine what the stress is like. How about we create a COBRA team, which is what the British government does in times of emergency. Create a COBRA emergency response team, if you like, with a small number of people to help navigate. So I thought about it carefully and I listened with an open mind. And then the next day I thought, yeah, you're right. And I made the decision to do this. So I brought together a team of five people, plus myself, from the range of disciplines within the organizations, finance, operations, PR, HR, legal. And I asked my team to be honest with me, because people I invited into that team were, one, very good at their job, and two, are people who are not yes people. They don't just say yes to me because it's comfortable. In fact, they will say no to me sometimes and tell me things I do not want to hear, but need to hear. And so what happened is, as soon as I brought that COBRA team around me, one, I felt supported. I was not my own anymore, as I was sitting in front of my computer at home, like everybody, with everybody set, nobody in the offices. But I felt supported and I had access to very smart thinking. And we talked about everything and we came up with very detailed plans. We came up with COVID protocols to get back into production. And we were the first group out of the gate to create big drama series for the BBC, a big entertainment show, The Masked Singer for ITV, both in the UK. We were way ahead of the gate and we shared those COVID protocols around our industry. We said to people, this is what we're doing. What are you doing? What can we learn from you? And there was really excellent collaboration actually across the sector, all across the world, people sharing their learnings. So the message for me was, when you bring a core team of people together, you must listen to them. You must listen to them calmly and with an open mind. Be willing to hear stuff that you don't like. Then go away and think about it. Take time. You must not rush. Being a calm, purposeful leader, even in times of crisis, is essential. And then when you've slept on it, taken some more advice if necessary, then you start to choose the things that you're going to do. At which point, at the point of implementation, you have to bring a very different skill to the table. And that is fierce resolve. So fierce determination that once you as a management team have made the decision, you must put it into action and see it through. No ifs, no buts, no dithering, no suddenly changing your mind. You must execute, because then you are on the path and you will make things happen. And it's not easy either, but if you do that, you will be successful. And the book contains 16 chapters which describe the process that we went through as a group and which others could go through. And I interviewed many other leaders in many different sectors who shared similar stories. And we broken down the process of that kind of leadership in a crisis into 16. Mm-hmm. And the lessons are simple, but they're not easy, but they do work.
Yeah, yeah. If we look ahead into the future, what are your current pain points or challenges as a leader?
Well, the world has been in a difficult place for 18 months. We've had massive inflation. We've got a cost of living crisis. People are struggling to pay their bills. We've got terrible wars in the Ukraine, in Israel and Gaza, and many other problems around the world. We are not living now in a time where there is just one crisis and that goes away and then we can all take a breath. We're living in a time of perma crisis. We are constantly facing these challenges. So we need to be flexible and nimble in our mindset and build teams that are also flexible in the way they operate, with excellent communication and willing to pivot on the spot and try something different if this thing doesn't work. So what are we doing right now? Our core expertise is content creation. We tell stories, and we know that people, since time began, people have always wanted to sit around the fire and listen to great stories. And that's what we do. That's our core skill. And increasingly, how can we use technology to supercharge that, to basically make sure that that expertise is being disseminated around the world, the content is being shared in as many places as possible. And also, we are a business. We're not in it to be a charity. We want to make money. So how do we monetize our content? At the moment, many back catalogs, there are millions of hours of great content around the world that are sitting there untapped. How do we make sure that that content, using AI as a new technology, is disseminated around the world so that people can enjoy the great content that's available? We can also make money out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And in all of this, how do you take care of yourself with that big vision, with that resolve that you mentioned? How do you take care of yourself so that then you can take care of everybody else?
It's very important to look after yourself. Again, as I said before, to imagine that you can be a superhero is just nonsense. And we all have skills and we all have weaknesses. So it is very important, just in a very simple term, to make sure that you're eating, that you're sleeping well. Now, I personally believe in partnership. Your partner and family, if that's right for you, it's a good thing. Look after the caring people around you, put your back. I think also it's important, actually, in truth, to make sure that difficult talks are kept at arm's length. So I'm a great believer in being kindly and compassionate, honest about people in your life. And sometimes you have to make choices and say, I wish you well. Right now, your life and my life do not interconnect. So I'm just going to keep my distance. So I think that's important. I think it's important to take time out. Holidays are by law, you have to take holiday and money often. I'm always insisting to my people, please go away. Go and sit on a beach or go and ride a horse or go and read a book for a while. Just take time out. We do have systems and processes within the organization. We've made lots of therapeutic help available. There's mindfulness, I've done mindfulness myself. I'm a great believer in training in health and practice. So I think there are a lot of things. I do talk about some in the book as well. I do think that as a leader, you have to know that if you're in a leadership position, you want to win gold medals. Well, I think of myself a bit like that. I like to win more than 130 international medals. That feels good. Demonstrates you're doing good work. But you can't win the gold medal every day. You have to know that sometimes, in the wild world, you need to take yourself out, go and do something completely different. Go and sit with people who know nothing about your industry. You're not going to ask you to question. You don't need to show off and jingle. Just go and be a normal human being somewhere else. And then, little by little, you start to prepare it then. You start slowly training. You go to the gym, that's what you do. You go walking, you take a dog out. And then, little by little, you build a bit. Gets to race day, you're well prepared, well rested. You go on into that new race, and you've got a chance of winning gold again. And then back to the beginning. Well, it is an ongoing process. I want to continue doing my job as long as I possibly can. So to do that, I need to manage myself, my mind, and ultimately my spirit on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's so easy sometimes to cast leaders in a particular light, whether it's a political leader or a business leader. And I always give people a chance to share something which other people are like not aware of. So would you like to share something about you, which is very dear to you or which forms a big part of your life, but most people around you, especially those you work with, are not aware of that?
I think one of them would probably actually that I really love cooking.
Mm-hmm.
I think cooking is a way of demonstrating love. And that can be love for other people, somebody you care for that you want to cook for, somebody who is in a crisis. You cook them a nice meal and it might make them feel a little better, a bit calmer, a bit more grounded, a bit more present. Uh-huh. And I think it's a form of self-love actually as well, because when you take time to choose produce, prepare a beautiful meal, you are saying, I'm here, I care for myself and the people around me, and I want to do something special that's going to make us feel good. And it will be nurturing, it will be healthy, it will be nutritious, provide some time out from the crazy day-to-day rush. And I think I don't get to cook all the time because I'm very busy, but I know that when I'm rested, I'm in a good place, that if I choose to cook something that will be delicious and healthy and will make me feel good and make people around me feel good, then that is a noble enterprise. And I really encourage people to do the same. I'm sure people have lots of different ways of taking time out and showing that kind of love to the moment, if you like. But for me, cooking is the way to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I think the way you shared it, using the word love, which like very rarely comes in the context of a leadership or a business podcast. So can you share a bit more, right? How does that care or love seep into your leadership, seep into your everyday decision-making?
Listen, I think being real and being authentic is an essential part of being a leader. Emotional intelligence for me is probably one of the most important skills that I have. And it was a gift. I don't know where it came from. Maybe it was my parents gave it to me, gift from the universe. But you talk in your websites and your business about listening generously. That's about showing respect for people around you and hearing their truth and being willing to think that they may be right and I may be wrong, or they have a different view on things, or they need something really badly that perhaps I can provide. And we do talk about Argonaut as being a handrail. That's my company, Argonaut. It's a handrail for creative people to get up their ladder, their staircase. Whatever is your staircase, whatever journey you are on as a creative person, my company, Argonaut, will always be there for you. And you can tap in and you can use our expertise as people, our relationships, our skills in legal, commercial, business affairs, editing, PR, HR. We can provide all of those services as the handrail. And if you don't need or want the handrail, then you don't have to use it. So I think emotional intelligence and listening to people around you, especially in the creative sector, is absolutely vital. And I remind myself all of the time that when a creative is putting a piece of content together, whether it's on Netflix or whether it's on TikTok, whether it's on the BBC, they are exposing themselves to the world. And that is frightening. And the stakes are very high. And if something is a huge hit, they will win gold medals and be praised to the skies. And if something is a failure, they may lose their income and never be able to work again. It can be that extreme. So the creative process is very demanding and very difficult, and it goes deep. Because, of course, when you're producing a documentary or a movie, you're going inside because you want to find the truth, the emotional truth. And you want to make your audiences laugh or make them cry and empathize, connect. So that's a very deep process. And if you're doing that in a commercial environment, which we are, we're producing for customers, clients who are giving us millions of dollars to produce programs in time, then you are at risk. So a lot of my job working with creative people is trying to marry between giving talented people space to do their work and help them where I can to develop their ideas. And then on the other side, providing infrastructure and support, which is rock solid and trustworthy. So they know the numbers, they know their legal contractual obligation. And bring those two things, which are fundamentally opposite, together. And quite often I find myself in the middle. And that is the role of a producer, to bring creative and commercial, business and legal together to make it work. So you need a lot of patience and you need to do a lot of listening. And actually, in truth, you need a lot of experience. I mentioned two companies I worked for. I worked for about 15 different leaders in my 20s and my early 30s, and 15 or so different companies, from the BBC to Discovery to small independents. And each one have incredible strengths that you can learn from. And each one have weaknesses that I thought maybe I wouldn't do it that way. Maybe there's a better way to do it. So experience feeds into that. But the core emotional intelligence, compassion, listening, communicating with people is at the heart of running a successful business.
Absolutely. I think I love how you put these two together, right? The listening, the compassion, the love, with the very clear clarity on the numbers, right? And all of these can be difficult conversations, but they can become much more easier conversations when you approach that from a place of kindness, from a place of love. And that actually allows you to be more direct sometimes or more clear sometimes. And the flip side of that, I think fear, or when you're trying to avoid a particular emotion, allows you to just sometimes go around in circles and not reach the heart of the matter. So thank you for adding that. I think what I loved is how you see them together and then not against each other. That was one. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes they are pulling in opposite direction.
Yes.
We have to look at the way to bring them together.
Yes. Absolutely. I think it was a delight having this conversation with you. So before we end, is there anything else that you would like to share from your book or any interesting lesson from your life that would add to our conversation today?
Oh, thank you for that opportunity. But yes, just reminds people, my book is called The Flexible Method. It's available on Amazon, all good bookstores. It hit the number one spot in the UK and the US. And I wrote the book to be a conversation. I wrote it to be purposeful. I wanted to put down in writing our experiences at my group, but also, as I described, leaders from politics, from medicine, agriculture, from real estate, from finance, from hospitality, from gyms, from many different sectors, all of whom have battled their way through difficult times. And I wanted to put it in writing so that there is a manual that people can now reach. When the next crisis hits or when your business is struggling, you can reach for this and I hope find some wisdom in that. And I've been getting good feedback. People are finding it helps. But crucially, I didn't write it to be just that and that to be it. I wrote it to be an ongoing dialogue. So to your point, I'm very proactive on LinkedIn. I love people write to me and they've read the book or they just have ideas. They have leadership ideas. They have personal development ideas they want to share. I really would like people, I'd like to encourage people to engage with me and give me feedback, share their ideas. This is an ongoing process. And we're all in this together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I love that frame of that as a conversation, right? Because I can see, like in the early part of my life, I used to read books for information or as content. But when you see it as a dialogue, as a conversation, you can have very different conversations, even with the same written words. So I'm reading a book, but it's almost like having a conversation with the author or having a conversation within myself. And then the same book, the same content can create new insights, which can be valuable for me. So I love that framing, right? It's not just something static out there, which you hold in your hand. It's something dynamic, and it's about how you engage with that. So thank you for sharing that. I'm so glad I asked you that question. And as you said, one thing which I will do is, with the show notes, I will make sure to include your LinkedIn profile and the other links so that people can reach out to you and accept your invitation and engage in that dialogue, have a conversation with you. And I will obviously add the link to the book as well. So thank you, James, for coming on the show, sharing what you shared, doing what you do and what it takes to do what you do. But more importantly, I think what I am listening is how you do it. And I think there is a level of beauty there, which for the listener, maybe they can experience it. It's very difficult to describe it in words. But I invite everybody who's listening to see for what cannot be captured in words, because there's something in the way that you have answered every question. I think there is something juicy there, which makes you who you are.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it for this episode of Choosing Leadership with Sumit Gupta. I choose leadership every time I record this podcast, and I invite you to do the same. I invite you to design a life of joy, meaning, pride, and satisfaction, not just for yourself, but for everybody around you. If you got something out of this episode, would you share this episode on social media? And if you know somebody who would be a great guest, can you tag them on social media to let them know about the show? And if you are a leader who wants to acknowledge how far you have come and have big dreams for the future, please reach out to me to be a guest on this podcast. And I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. This is what I do most naturally, to lovingly and gently provoke you, to help you see your own light, to help you see what you are already capable of. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, go to deployyourself.com and subscribe to my newsletter or follow me on LinkedIn. I want to thank everyone who contributed to making this show a reality, and I want to thank you for listening. Always remember that you are enough, you are loved, and you matter. This is Sumit. Until next time, keep choosing leadership.